Hello, everyone, and welcome to UBS On Air. I am pleased to welcome you to the next installment in our podcast series with the UBS Asset Management Team, House Call, Talking Equity Markets with UBS AM. Today, I am joined by Jeremy Zirin, Senior Portfolio Manager of the House View Equity Portfolios and Head of the Private Client U.S. Equity Team, and Dominique Shager, UBS Asset Management Senior Equity Investment Specialist. We'll be diving into equity markets today with Jeremy and Dominique. With that brief introduction, I'll pass it over to Dominique to lead us into some Q&A.
Great. Thank you, Siobhan. As always, we appreciate you having us on the show. So last year, the S&P 500 had an incredible run. It was up over 26%. And so far this year, we've also witnessed a strong start to the year, with the S&P being up almost 8%. Jeremy, in prior calls, you've laid a very constructive view on the U.S. equity markets. Can you walk us through what's been happening so far this year?
Yeah, absolutely. We've had a strong start to the year, as you just mentioned, Dom. And I would say broadly, the key themes that drove markets higher last year are mostly in place so far in 2024. First and foremost, despite high interest rates, the U.S. economy continues to flex its muscles and show resiliency, particularly in labor markets. Non-farm payroll growth has averaged 250,000 in the first 2 months of the year, which is right in line with the average monthly payroll growth that we saw in all of 2023. So labor markets not only remain resilient, but robust. And that's really important since consumer spending is roughly two-thirds of U.S. GDP, and Americans tend to spend when they have steady or growing wages and feel good about their prospects for keeping their jobs. And even on the manufacturing side of the economy, which has been slumping over the past few quarters, we are seeing some signs of stabilization. And, whether that's looking at, order trends or some, cleaning up of some higher levels of inventories. And I think this is, starting to look like it's planting the seeds for the next leg up in growth, particularly, when and if interest rates come down. The second theme is that we've seen stronger corporate profit trends. Right. Last year, S&P 500 earnings were essentially flat at $220 a share. But that figure masks the sequential quarterly improvement that we did see each quarter during the year last year, culminating in, fourth quarter earnings season, which is still just wrapping up. It looks like fourth quarter results are on track for S&P earnings to be up about 9%. And keep in mind, that's coming off the first year, the first half of last year where earnings contracted and the third quarter of mid-single digit growth. So, reasonably good momentum in corporate profits. And just as importantly as the current numbers suggest, forward-looking consensus estimates for full year 2024, i.e. this year, are pointing to a similar high single-digit earnings growth rate. And that seems very reasonable and doable if the broader economy remains in such good shape and we see, a pickup in some of the lagging segments such as energy and, pockets of the industrials and the financial sector. And then finally, within the market, I'd say some trends this year have been similar to what we saw last year as well. We've seen a bit more differentiation within the so-called Magnificent Seven, mega cap tech stocks compared to last year. But still, last year it was tech and communication services as the two top performing sectors in the S&P 500. And so far this year, those same two sectors, tech and communication services, are sitting atop the sector leaderboard. And similarly, defensive sectors such as utilities and staples, which lagged last year, are also trailing the market, once again. So overall, a resilient economy, improving corporate profits, and continued momentum in big cap tech, specifically in, artificial intelligence related stocks within the mega cap tech landscape, have been the big driver so far this year.
Thanks, Jeremy. So overall, it sounds like a fairly positive and constructive start. However, earlier this week, core CPI data came in a little higher than expected. And this is the second print in a row that is slightly higher than anticipated. In prior calls, you've mentioned that the last mile on the road to the Fed's 2% long-term inflation target could be a little bit bumpy. Can you give us the latest on inflation and, why should investors care?
Yeah, I'll answer the second question first, right? Markets care a lot about what's going on with inflation because after the Fed lost control of inflation in 2022 when inflation spiked, the Fed is laser focused on making sure that inflation returns to its 2% target. So the longer inflation stays above that 2% target, the Fed will keep interest rates sufficiently high to try to cool inflation. And the longer interest rates stay elevated, all things being equal, there's a bigger drag on the economy, since end markets like housing suffer when mortgage rates are high and affordability for autos becomes more challenging when financing with monthly payments becomes more expensive. And more generally, you know, higher inflation erodes the purchasing power for consumers that are on a fixed income budget. So ultimately, you know, the longer interest rates stay high, you know, the risks of a hard landing rise. And currently, you know, the Fed funds rate stands at 5.25% to 5.5%. And that is high, right? The Fed estimates that the neutral Fed funds rate is closer to, you know, 2.5% to 3%. The good news on inflation, if you just take a step back and look at the big picture, not the month-to-month noise, is that there has been a clear disinflationary trend, right? The monthly inflation data can be noisy, but if you zoom out and look at the Fed's preferred measure of inflation, the personal consumption expenditures, or PCE index, and you strip out some of the more volatile food and energy components and look at core PCE, inflation rates peaked in 2022 at over 5%. They fell to below 3% by the end of last year, and the latest reading, which covers January, is down to 2.8%. So that's the good news. You know, the bad news, as you just mentioned, Dom, is that the last couple of CPI readings, which correlate but not exactly one for one with PCE, have been a little hotter than expected and has challenged this disinflation trend, which markets have cheered for the past 15 months. But if you look at and bifurcate the inflation data in the CPI index into goods and services, what you find is that all of the inflation is coming from services, and goods prices for the last several months have been roughly flat and slightly in deflation. And so my bottom line in inflation is that, yeah, we could see month-to-month noise. Yes, you know, there could be a little bit of more stickiness as we get from 3% to 2%. But I think that we are going to see, you know, weaker demand for services as the consumer starts to shift their spending back to goods from services after we've seen this bolus of service spending, which has largely been, you know, a long tail of the revenge spending as the economies in the U.S. and globally have opened up after, you know, pretty strict and severe COVID restrictions. So I think that we do need to recognize the path could be bumpy. You know, the fact that oil prices and other commodity prices have picked up over the past few weeks may put some pressure on month-over-month readings of headline inflation. And, you know, there are, in fact, structural reasons why in the long term, we, you know, 2% may not be the right target on inflation. It could be closer to 2.5-3% because of demographics, because of deglobalization. And so there's inflation isn't a simple topic, but I think that in this business cycle, the Fed will succeed in getting inflation back to their target to 2%. And I think that it's likely that that path will ultimately result in, you know, the Fed starting to see interest rate cuts as they get more evidence that that path is not being challenged in the near term.
Thank you, Jeremy. I think inflation was certainly one of the more utilized behind AI as the top most used words last year. It seems like, similar to last year, it's all about growth stocks. Can you talk to us about some of the trends driving the market? Again, is the excitement around AI still the only thing that's working out there?
Yeah, AI isn't the only thing that's working, but it's certainly getting a lot of attention, and frankly, deservingly so. I mean, the number of companies mentioning AI and their AI strategy on earnings calls is just skyrocketing, and the strong, you know, price performance and earnings contributions from AI beneficiaries, particularly, you know, within semiconductors, which lay the foundation for the AI infrastructure build-out, has been a big support to, you know, the overall S&P 500 earnings trends that I've been talking about. But AI isn't the only thing that's working this year. I mean, you're right that growth stocks are beating value stocks so far this year, but it's only by, you know, a couple percentage points now, and the gap has narrowed over the past month or so. And over that time, we're starting to see a lot more of the value-oriented sectors like financials and energy, which really struggled to keep up with the broader market last year, start to perk up a bit, and both of those have delivered, you know, solid in line or even slightly better than market returns so far this year. And as we look ahead, I think we're going to see a bit more of this broadening out trend, right? I think more broadening out of the market gains, so it won't be so lopsided with only mega-cap tech names driving the market higher. And if you look at valuations for many of the market segments outside of tech, they look, you know, attractive, particularly on a relative basis. And in a soft landing economic scenario, we do see, you know, disinflation later in the year, the market get confidence that the Fed can start cutting interest rates and we can have sustained economic activity. We should start to see earnings trends start to improve for the more cyclical and value oriented segments of the market, which should drive a broadening, you know, a continued broadening out of market returns. But I want to be very clear that this does not necessarily mean to rotate out of growth stocks or away from the AI theme. But perhaps we should, you know, look at, you know, a more balanced approach within equity holdings. And even within the AI theme, I think we need to look at the evolution of AI in stages, right? The first stage has been the build-out of AI infrastructure required to run the large language models. And the early winners have been the picks and shovels plays that supply that technology, mostly in the semiconductor space. As more capabilities are created, you know, companies are going to increasingly examine exactly how they can benefit from AI from either boosting productivity or how AI can open up new sales channels for them. So going forward, I think the market will increasingly start to reward, you know, the companies that can actually deliver AI-focused final products to customers and those companies that can implement direct AI-related tasks into their business to improve productivity. And, you know, ultimately, you know, companies are going to have to show that, you know, they can monetize the investments that they're making in AI in a tangible way.
Thank you, Jeremy, and thank you for your time again.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreement and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.